enough.
Yeah, because my voice is not good. I'll try to project.
Okay. So I think it's going to be fine. So how do you recall the community got first involved with farm worker movement, and approximately when?
It was, I almost can tell you, it was in 69 that we really began to be involved. We were certainly sympathetic towards the movement, but we had a high school in Fresno, Queen of the Valley, and the sisters that were there were very pro-farm worker, just in theory anyway, as people had been. When did it start, about 66?
65. Fall of 65.
And I can remember going to a meeting in 68 in Philadelphia that Cesar Chavez was at.
What kind of a meeting?
It was I think they call it a Pax Christi meeting. It was an international meeting in Philadelphia. And I remember when he got onto the stage, the whole audience stood up from all over the world. They were just so in awe of this man. So we knew in 68, 67, 68, probably 66, what was going on, and we were sympathetic. But starting in 69, because of the high school and our connection there, some of us actually went down to Delano and spent a weekend with Mark Day, who was at the parish there, and stayed at the parish, at the parish housekeeper's house across the street, and began to see and to experience and to talk with the people and find out what was going on. And then, of course, we worked with the Franciscans that were in Fresno, Finian, and what's his name? He's at the mission now in Santa Barbara. David Currier. Mm-hmm. Well, they're Franciscans that were there in Fresno. And we began to then become more actively, personally actively involved, which was devastating for the school. Because, of course, the school was a school of fairly wealthy farmers in Fresno. And once they realized that the nuns were getting more and more involved in the farm worker movement, they pulled their children out more and more and more. So the school finally closed because financially we just couldn't make it. You know, it got down to 25 in a classroom, I guess. And it just wouldn't make it, high school. Mm-hmm. So we had to close it. And it was probably not directly related to the farm worker, but it was maybe 50% of it.
Wow, that's a big sacrifice institutionally.
It was, yeah. And you can put all kinds of other blames onto it, so you don't have to write it off as the farm worker problem, but those of us that were there know the feeling was so strong. Anyway, from there...
Were you in Fresno at the time?
Yeah, I was at the school.
You were teaching there.
69 to 71. Mm-hmm. Then what happened, we started working in the summertime, both with the farm worker people in other cities, and then eventually Joan Vieri and Christina went down and worked. Christina Saborillo, I don't know if you know her, worked like in the summertime, just to kind of get our feet wet. And then people began to literally go in to work with the farm workers, like Linda Snow, Marianne Sandoval, Marilyn Schaefer, spent time either in Eileen, remember Eileen Francis, an older woman?
I don't remember Eileen.
Well, three of our sisters, and I can't remember, maybe four, because it was Joan and Marianne and Linda, I think Linda and Eileen Francis, got a little house in Delano and actually worked with the farm workers full time. And that was the first group that really went in ministry to that particular.
Was Marianne the sister that died of mm-hmm. cancer?
Yeah. Marianne was had just asked to go to Peru and went to get her physical, and they discovered a lump on her breast. And that stopped her from working in Peru, but anyway. But she was working with the farm workers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The other dynamic that I remembered when I thought of it was we had started in our community about that same time, 69, 70, a social justice commission, I guess we call it, social justice. I don't know what we called it, commission. And I was the director of it. And the people that we got together, we would meet either here in L.A. or in Fresno. We met quite a bit in Fresno. And so at that time, we had people from the farm workers come to talk with us. I can remember once asking Dolores Huerta to come. Then we went to Delano to make sure that we saw it firsthand, because it was so much a part of being in the valley, you know. And that group then, it was interesting, as each person individually and then as a group actually met the whole farm worker movement, or met Caesar, or met somebody involved in it, or went into the fields and saw for yourself, because it was so easy to do, they became totally convinced that this was important to do something, you know, put our lives on the line. So then we would be so convinced, we'd go to the other sisters, and of course they just couldn't accept it at all. And so we presented a suggestion at a community meeting, like a legislative body that we have, to take a stand on the farm workers as a community. And our community was not able to do that, and caused great furor, and it almost totally destroyed the social justice secretariat. It wasn't a commission, secretariat.
And what was that form, that position formed around? Was it formed around supporting the farm worker struggle or the boycott, or do you remember?
Both. I don't remember which boycott was in existence. It was grapes. But it was both. It was to support what Cesar Chavez was trying to do with unionizing farm workers, to change legislation, to do something that would be helpful to this group of people that were totally unrepresented, and next to house cleaners, you know, totally out of the system. And then was to ask us to do some of the boycotting. Well, from there we did. Many people then picked it up, and certainly we boycotted. And that seemed to begin to take hold with some people. But you would also have the reactionary group. You know, you'd go to some convents and they would put grapes on the table. Mm-hmm. Or later on they would make sure that you had your iceberg lettuce and then kind of look at you and see how you'd respond. So it did cause a lot of tension. Which anything I think that's worth standing up for is going to do, because you're going to have people that believe the opposite. You know, but it was, the way we did it, everybody said, was the wrong way. We should have done it through an educative method. We should have given them more literature. So we backed up and we apologized profusely, and then we started producing literature, and we started asking people to pin this information on the bulletin board and that information on the bulletin board. And then they just, you know, said, there's too much literature, we can't read all this stuff. It's, you know. So people, from there, I began to realize, no matter what you do or how you do it, somebody who's not going to like it is going to complain. So what you do is you talk over first the best way to go about something. You agree that this is the way that you think is the most sane and the most solid way, and then you do it, knowing that you're going to have all these people who are opposing it.
That's a very interesting kind of case study.
Oh, I think it's
because how many groups of people have had that kind of experience where they have actually then changed their strategy to try to accommodate to the complaints and have, mm-hmm. and could clearly document, well, then we went to an educated process. Mm-hmm. Did no more good.
Well, that's me speaking. I think other people may say, well, it did bring in a few more people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the process that really brought people it was two pronged. One was experiencing whatever it was, and the other was your peers, your conversation level, your being able to read and see what it's saying, feel what it's saying. And if those two aspects weren't there, people just couldn't do it. Then I went out of the job, and Marilyn Schaefer came in. And Marilyn Schaefer is, well, you know Marilyn Schaefer. She's just such a good organizer. And she's so in touch with working with people, that our whole participation in the farm worker movement then really took hold. Because then we had the educational process, then we had the process by which people could have the personal experience. It was wonderful. And you remember the Coachella demonstration that...
In 73?
Is that 73?
That's when there was a lot happening in 73 because of the Teamsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a lot there. The other thing that was wonderful that happened, there was a major superiors meeting in San Francisco one year. I think that's what it was. And as part of their, whatever, part of the process of their program, they brought some people down to Delano, or to the fields, to see what was going on. And 40 of them got arrested, and 40 priests, I think, and lots of nuns, more nuns than priests, I know.
And that was in Fresno?
That was in Parlier, yeah.
Parlier, okay. Uh-huh. So that was a meeting of major superiors of women. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to find out what that... Oh, it was both. Both were going on?
Yeah, both. It is interesting that they had both. But it was major superiors, yeah.
I asked Gene Boyle about that, and he remembered about himself being there.
Yeah.
And he knew that there were a lot of priests, but he had forgotten completely about the women.
Oh, well, there were another place.
Oh, were there women?
More women than men. I can remember driving Joan Byrie down. We were here in L.A., and she wanted to be there by 5 in the morning. So two of us left here at 2 o'clock in the morning, I guess, drove her to Parlier, and that was when Dorothy Day was at. She was at that, and we met Dorothy Day, and then we brought them out to the fields, and we watched them all get arrested. Then we came back and worked. Remember Pearl? What was Pearl's last name? She was such a great woman.
With the union for a long time.
Yeah, we went back and helped her in the office for a while, and then we drove back to L.A. The two of us that had gone. And we almost fell asleep 1,000 times in that car. We made it. And then there were hordes of people that kept coming all summer to either get arrested or to be with the farm workers. And we had two friends that went down with a bag and a toothbrush so that they'd get arrested, and they never got arrested. They still tell their funny tale about walking up and down the San Joaquin Valley trying to do something for the farm workers. Give their life to the farm workers. Nobody wanted them. And then we went to Parlier, or to the, where was that? They were in a jail out of Fresno. We went to visit them. They first went to the county jail in Fresno, and then they put them out in this farm.
Yeah, a county farm set up. I've seen pictures of it. Yeah.
And so we'd go to visit them. They had mass. You know, the priest would say mass on their side, and the woman would sort of come to the fence to share in the mass.
Do you know any of the sisters who were arrested at that time that are around L.A. now?
Yes, Rose Cecilia Harrington lives with Louise Delicasa Esperance. She's one of our general... superiors, or whatever you call
them. Rose Cecilia.
Rose Cecilia Harrington is her last name. I have her phone number next door. I don't have any.
I have the number, the old number.
Louise
is
Casa. Yeah, it's the same. 272972 or something like that. She was arrested at the time. The other person that's in the area is Joan Byrie.
Is she?
Out in Montrose, yeah. She's in the area of here.
What's she doing?
She is... I think she's working at a hospice or at a hospital. One of the two.
Maybe after we finish, I could get her address or her phone number.
Yeah, and maybe I think I might have both.
Okay, that would be good.
Yeah, they would be very good. Rose Cecilia, from the standpoint that she was one of those major superiors that happened down there and got arrested. And she could tell you about the meeting and what they were up to and what the idea was. But I know it changed her life, and I know it changed the life of another one of those women from New York. And right now I can't remember her name, but it literally changed their lives, that experience. or at least as I look at them, it, they took a turn for the better, you know, and realized that this is something that you can't just philosophize about it or intellectualize about it. You want to become involved. And I think that's what happened to sister after sister after sister. And even there's one sister who right now is running a shelter for the homeless in San Diego. And she herself is from Fresno. And her family, I think her father is a farmer. And she was so opposed to the whole pharmaco movement. I mean, to the point of just being bitter. And at times couldn't even talk to me because she knew that I was in favor of it. And, you know, it was just, she was so bitter. And she mellowed and then listened and then became actively involved in the movement. It's just a conversion like you wouldn't believe. She'd be somebody that might be interesting to talk with to see yes. her relationship. Her name is Christine. I can give you her number too. Christine. Christine Mary Giordano. But for those of us who are from the valley, you know, it was a very, very difficult situation because we were raised to believe that somebody like this, Cesar Chavez, must be a communist, and that we are good, we are wonderful, and you know, you have, like, my next-door neighbor in Fresno happens to be Wolf. I don't know that you... Well, they happen to be... they're part of the Giffen setup, and...
The Giffen Ranch.
Yeah, and he now has... When Giffen divided, Wolf got at least a third of that ranch. And they're our next-door neighbors.
He's part of that family, the Giffen family?
He was the overall manager of all the Giffen
oh, I see.
Stuff, so he probably bought a third of the ranch and the family, split up the mm-hmm. estate.
Giffen was in our church years ago when
That's
we were
right.
in Mendota. Oh, I mean, gosh. He never came, but he was on the
there,
rolls.
Yeah. But, you know, and I heard it all my life that, oh, these farmers are so wonderful to the farm workers. Why, at Christmas they give them free gifts. And I used to think, isn't that wonderful? You know, and never realizing that the kind of life they lived. And then I did some social work in Fresno before I entered, so I began to have a little inkling of what was going on. And, of course, the book that influenced me most in my whole life was The Grapes of Wrath. That in the Bible and in Vatican II. But, and then I saw some of that, you know, because living there, living in the city, and knowing the white-collar farmers is a very different story from driving in into the valley and seeing where the farm workers live. And so it was a matter, again, of experiencing and hearing it and talking to people and realizing the situation, that the human element.
So you were raised in Fresno.
Yeah, I was, and so was Chris. So it would you might hear it a little differently from us because it was an emotional kind of a conversion that happened as separate or different from just an intellectual thing.
Yes.
But anyway, let's see if there's anything else I remembered about our community. I think the lines that were drawn in our community became very evident at that time. Now, part of it, of course, is Vatican II, living out of Vatican II. Part of it is the Vietnam War was involved at that time, you know, that issue. But the thing that we could really somehow center around, because we were the Western province and we were in these areas, was the farm worker movement. And it also split us, made our traditional split more evident. And I think that same kind of split exists even today, with periodically an issue will carry us one way or the other. But in our attitude towards life, towards now the feminist movement, towards nuclear arms. Nuclear arms may be one thing that has broadened. And the other interesting thing that's important, and I don't think we could have come to this if it hadn't been for the farm worker experience, our attitude towards Central America. That's pretty much the one thing we're unified on in our community right now. And that is that partly because, oh, I forgot about Julie Marciac, who certainly was involved in the farm worker movement and, you know, got arrested here, and everybody said, oh, not Julie, you know, this quiet woman. Now, because of her presence in Nicaragua, it has done a whole lot to make our community rethink what we read in the papers, mm-hmm. because she comes up and talks to us periodically. That has done a lot to unify us around the realization that what we're saying in the newspapers and what our government is saying is not the facts of Central America. So, but again, it was a process that came, that grew out of the farm worker movement.
In addition to her having been involved herself personally, do you see other ways that the information or understanding about the farm worker situation affects the current understanding of the community about Central America?
Yes. The understanding of the Hispanic carries over into the whole Latin American issue. And then we also have sisters in Peru. Mm-hmm. And our sisters in Peru did something that we have not yet been able to do up here, and that is they, together as a community of nuns down there, chose to stand with the poor by leaving any institution that we had that they felt catered to the wealthy or that the wealthy themselves could do without them. So we left all of our schools, and we left our working with the military hospital that we were nursing and staffing because it was connected with the government, and we felt that was wrong. They felt that it was wrong. We started working with college students and working up in the mountains and working with the people that migrate from the mountains into the cities and working with the farm workers in Peru. And those experiences again came to us. And so we saw the farm worker, the Central American, the Peruvian situations not as separate. And the whole liberation theology concepts that we know are the church in action, all of those have influenced us. And seeing the farm workers and the farm worker movement is very much a liberation theology movement, very much a Comunidad de Base movement.
But no one really ever talks about that. It's very unselfconscious in mm-hmm. in that sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested in some of your reflections on that.
Let's see, I don't know. It's interesting. That's true, isn't it? It's not a conscious movement. What's happened is, I think, once we who are educated to teach predominantly, or had been up to more recent years, once we began working with farm workers, a campesino, and realize their modus vivendi, or however you might say that, we began to realize that theologically people are touched by their own experiences and by sharing their own experiences. And so the banking theory of education no longer held. You can't just open ahead and pour information in. The shared theory of education that you know as much as I do, but we just happen to know it in different ways, became a reality. So we began going to MOC, you know, in, however you say that, in Texas, you know, what's that called?
The cultural center?
Yeah, yeah. We did some work in quite a few people went to San Jose to that Comunidad de Base set up there, right? I don't know what it is, but our novices went one year. Christina Savarillo went. Some of our other sisters, I don't know, who went to that and began to realize, you know, educationally, but they were right. They had experienced people. And it was a process, a very gradual thing. And then people would spend, like, remember when Marilyn Schaefer spent, I don't know how many months, at La Paz?
I'd forgotten that.
I can remember going up and visiting her and having the meetings that we had. You know, we did a lot. Then there was a famous meeting.
In fact, I may not have known that she did that. It might have been really before we were very acquainted. Because she and I didn't really get to know each other until 1975, 76, when I came with the Interfaith Hunger Coalition. We were just sort of acquainted before that. Just.
And it was before then that she was... she went there. We had a meeting of our sisters in Delano when Marianne Sandoval was there. And it was one of those first liberation movement meetings for our sisters, but we had it at Delano. So maybe we didn't talk too much about it, but those movements were so interconnected with us. The whole idea of freeing the our liturgical participation, of opening our theological understanding, of broadening our ministry and the kind of service we did, and our sense of mission, what we're about, our understanding of community, living a different kind of community, the feminist movement, I guess, but that all of those things were coming together. Well, we met in Delano, and it was one of the most beautiful experiences anyone that met at that will tell you. You know, they can trace back a whole change in their life to Delano. And they'll mention Delano. We slept in
about when would that have been, Marilyn? About,
I would say 72 or 73.
Before all those arrests in 73? Say?
It was in the... During the year. It wasn't in the summer, so... I think it was, but I'm hazy about that, but I think it was. We slept in the school. And you know, there was a nursery school that Marianne had started in the church in Delano. That's what Marianne did there. She had a nursery school for the farm worker children, and the children in the parish. And so they opened that, and we put sleeping bags out on the floor, and we slept right there in the school. And then we met right there in the hall. Well, it was like the church hall. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was a school in that parish. I don't think they had a school. And it was wonderful. It was just like a weekend, I guess. During the school year, they came from Oakland and San Francisco.
Between 40 and 60 of you that went to that particular meeting,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was for the purpose of, do you recall?
I'm trying to think what the name of it was. We did a lot of feminist types of things, which makes me wonder if it were later than. No, it wasn't. It was like, well, Marianne was still alive, so it was 72 or 3 probably. We did some feminist things like movement and sharing our stories, telling where we were and what our dreams were. It was like a getting us together to hear each other, which is also very much a liberation movement. You know, it may not be what it is, I think, what the liberation theologians would do.
The affirmation of a person and that person's experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we felt it most appropriate to have that at the center of the farm worker movement. So that was another reason that we had it there. That this had really been like the hub or core of our strength for moving into a direction that said this is what Christianity needs to be for me and for us.
Interesting.
I know it may have been somewhat unsaid, but yet it was definitely in our consciousness. The other thing is that community that lived there was was the ideal community, if you could have such a thing. They lived poverty to the hilt.
You're talking about the staff of the union? Yeah, is that what you're talking about?
The, you know, Joan Byron and Eileen and Marianne and I think Linda Snow. Oh, another one of the sisters that worked there for a while is now in Peru as a missionary. Teresa Cavalla. She worked there for a while. And what they did is they lived in a home, right? A little home right in Delano. And I think everyone in the whole community went there and stayed overnight at some point. There was always room for people. If you were driving up north, you know, you would drop by Delano and visit the nuns there. They always had very simple food, but they always had food for you. And I think they ate on something like a dollar a day or something. I can't believe what they did. And then they saved their money so that they could give it to either some cause, some need that people would have. So they always were giving. I mean, none of us before or since have ever lived as they lived, that group. And they were just so happy and so together. It was an amazing situation. A real model. It was just wonderful. It was, and again, that was the spirit of the farm workers. That they were so imbued with that they lived it. And then each of us would sort of go and dip in a little bit, you know, and get a little strength, and then we'd go back to life again in some other place. The other thing that those experiences in Delano did for us, and in La Paz, and at 40 Acres, I mean, all those places, those of us who were teaching brought it back to our classrooms. And I can remember getting students at St. Bernard's to do things like we used to just comb the grocery stores here and get food for the farm workers. You know, we'd leaflet, we'd go up and down neighborhoods and leaflet to get food that we'd give to the farm workers. And some of those young people have been just really deeply affected. Even today, one of those people, by the way, is Mary Smith, who then went on and got her nursing credential, who worked with the Catholic workers for a long time, and who now is head of the outreach for the homeless for the West Side from that, you know, that grant that the city of L.A. got, partly downtown and partly the Venice Family Clinic? Well, Mary Smith is the outreach worker here. She's a some kind of nurse, you know, the kind of nurse that can do that. I don't know what you call them. They're not doctors, but they're right next to it. You know.
But, yeah, I know what
you
mean.
You know,
yeah.
That she got her. She just got a credential, and she happens to be the one running this program. And you know, it's so wonderful for a teacher to see that happening. That you do something. I'm moved because I experienced the farm worker movement. I bring it to a classroom. A student picks it up and sees what a Christian can be doing, what a Christian community is, and her whole life has changed, and her whole family's life has changed. You know, it isn't just that person that gets changed, and now she's working with the homeless, and her whole attitude, you see, is how important people are, and we listen to the people, and they have dignity, and again, and it stems right from the farm worker concept. It isn't something separate from that.
I wonder if I might be able to meet her.
Oh, sure. In fact, she's at our center right now.
Oh, is she?
Tuesday morning, unless they've left already, but we can walk over there and see if she's there.
If she has left, maybe I could get her.
I could get you the phone number of the clinic, and yeah, because they're coming one day a week to do some assessments, medical assessments of the homeless, and then in the afternoon they have a clinic for them. It's great, because otherwise, you know, they get sores and they get lots of high blood pressure problems. Anyway, did I make the connection?
Yeah
I think it's there.
I'm remembering along around, around 72 maybe, that there were some big struggles in the community about being able to live outside of a convent as such, remember the whole struggle about getting CASA? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. If you, a little bit.
And
I know,
yeah. And also questions about sisters who wanted to work with the farm worker movement, mm-hmm. and getting permission to do that. Do you have some recollections about that?
I remember that there was struggle, and I remember that people had to present, you know, I don't know if we petitioned or how we did it. I don't think, because I personally didn't ask to do that, I don't know enough to say, well, this is how it happened. Mm-hmm. I think Joan Byrie or Jeanette, no, not Jeanette Merrill, I guess, was more involved in that struggle.
Okay.
It's interesting that you bring that up, though, because it's true there was a lot of talking that had to take place about the importance of allowing us to do this kind of work, because it is within our ministry, our mission.
And what I'd like to know, and I never really knew at the time, was whether a lot of that then got focused around the farm worker movement, or whether that was just one of a number of options that women were asking for permission to work in.
I think that was the only thing at the time. In my recollection, that was the only request, was that kind of work. What then happened is, because we realized that's correct, you know, that's something we actually should be doing, and it's, then people like me could start up with something else and say, this is working with the people, and again, we were working with Hispanics here. It sort of laid the groundwork for other people to do something else. The other thing that came almost at the same time, and I don't know the right date here, was Claire Dunn wanting to be in the assembly in Arizona. And see, again, my dates are really hazy there, but that took a whole group of people. It's the first time we ever did that either, where our council, our governing board, said to a sister, no, you may not do that. And she then asked friends whom she knew had a similar attitude in it, and it was based on the starting from the farm worker and starting from the rights of people and the rights of the common person. We should be doing some active work, and she had come to the point where she realized she needed to do legislative action. Mm-hmm. And so then a group of us, and it's the first time this ever was done, met with our council. I don't know if it was 12 of us, and not petitioned, but talked and asked that Claire Dunn be allowed to run for this office against the will of one of the bishops. See, one of the bishops said it was okay, and the other bishop said no.
In Arizona.
And I forget how we worked it, but what it finally came down to was, she said it was a matter of conscience. Mm-hmm. And that changed, our provincial changed like that. Once she heard it was a matter of conscience, she did not feel it was her right to stop this woman from doing that, nor did she feel that she wanted to say, you can't be a member of our community. And of course, Rome hadn't spoken at that time. So that's what happened. But it was once again, it was the principle of, really, of liberation theology, the principle of the farm worker, where you have a group and you organize and you come together and ask for the rights of somebody. It's a very interesting moment.
I want to tell you a story. Well, are there any other things that occur to you that you would like to have me know about?
The only other thing was, and you just mentioned Mark Day, when he took Joan and me around Delano, I think I'll never forget it, because we went to Cesar Chavez's house and saw where he lived and met his family. And after that, every time people would say to me,
Well, we know he's just taken all that money and he lives on a estate up there in the mountains near Arvin and all that. I would say, I saw his house. And it was the kind of thing that you just never forget where he was and where his family was at that, you know, at the time. It was early enough. And then we also saw where they were going to build the 40 acres. And it was like, it was before a lot of stuff had happened. They weren't even up at La Paz at all. It was wonderful to have that experience with him.
Mm-hmm. From the insider's view, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's one other thing I'd like to ask. There have been, you know, as time passes, no human institution can survive without having a lot of criticism and without making mistakes sometimes too. Mm-hmm. How have you yourself and others that you know in the community been affected by some of the various controversies that have arisen? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think what's happened is the people have withdrawn in one sense from participating in what's going on in either La Paz or in Delano. And part of it was because of personalities. You know, certain people would come in and take over a certain section. And some of the people that I know that were there just didn't like it and didn't like the way that person functioned, so they sort of withdrew. I don't think anyone has lessened in her commitment to the farm worker movement. But I don't think a lot of people have continued to be that present, either there or in some of the movements that happen. When word of any boycott comes out, though, people, I mean, it's just like an automatic response now. And so you say, oh, you know, oh, I didn't hear about this, or, you know, my gosh, what have I been doing? It's not, well, I don't like that movement anymore. I think it might be a really important thing someday soon to rekindle what has happened, or I don't know what's happened personally, because what you read in the paper you can't believe, you know, if you say what's happened to Cesar Chavez or what's right. been going on. One of the things that I think is treacherous is what's happened to the farm labor board out of Sacramento. I mean, that's just devastating, I think, to the farm worker. And there's almost no press. There's been very little support that I know of personally. Just as I'm talking, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be important for us to ask Cesar Chavez to talk to our community someday? You know, just fill us in again.
You know, he's going to be in L.A. the whole week, next week.
Oh, is he? Mm-hmm.
Is he? Fred Eister was busy phoning about it to try to acquaint people with what was happening and get people to come out to some things.
Yeah.
There's going to be an early morning breakfast one morning. I have the information at home. I don't remember. I only remember when I was going. Mm-hmm. There's an early morning breakfast, like at 7:30 in the morning, at the Placita Church.
Mm.
And then there's going to be a lunch, which is what I'm going to go to, at Pullman Methodist,
mm-hmm.
at West Adams. And there's going to be picketing next Monday in the morning at 3rd and Vermont, the old 3rd and Vermont site that we all have become so familiar with. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if there's time free, but anyway, for information, yeah. that's he is going to be here. But that sounds like a really good idea. And right now is a time when he would be real responsive, I think, to trying to work out a time, because he wants people to know what's happening. And it's real hard to get the information out.
And see, I don't, maybe I just have been ignoring it. Maybe other people in our community know. But I don't get a feeling that we're really that in the know of what's going on. Mm-hmm. If stuff comes out of the Interfaith Hunger Coalition, then we probably know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like Bread and Justice probably writes stuff up on it, and that's about it. But I don't think it's like a real conscious thing. Mm-hmm. Although it's interesting, we're going to have a person now
in charge of the Social Justice Secretariat again.
Great.
And that's Annie McMullen. Do you know Annie McMullen? She'd be a good one. I think, I don't even know where she is right now. I have her number, though. I'll give it to you. Because the more that could happen there. The other person that I think could do a lot in our community and has been active in this is Toni Nash, because of the publication she's doing now, Science.
What is she working on?
She's publishing a monthly periodical for our community that really touches on everything, and she does it so well. We should go next door, and I should give you all these numbers, because it's important, I think. I'd be interested in knowing when those things are used to, just to kind of give myself a refresher course of what's happening.
Okay, great. Would they be
they're next
in
door.
This? Okay.
In our little office. Oh. You want to come over there, or do you want
to? Yeah, why don't I do that?
It's such a nice office.
No, I can close this.
Yeah, I do it.